This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi tamoto, MPR. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Malcolm Bush,
Bruce Markwell,
and I'm Stuart Burks.
Malcolm, I think from the point of view of your involvement with roller skating, you became well known within the whole of the New Zealand roller skating network, and I think from memory that took you overseas as
it did,
well.
Yeah, I'll come to that in a minute or two.
Right.
After the 2006 Nationals in Christchurch, mm-hmm. I'd done 17 years as championship manager.
Wow, 17 years?
17 years, yeah. I used to spend 8 months of my life every year organising nationals.
Did you like travelling all over the country or something?
I enjoyed the travel.
Yeah. And they paid for all that?
Yes.
Yeah.
They did. They used to pay for my airfares and travel costs, and they, during the championship itself, that would pay my cost for a motel.
Oh, okay.
So I was compensated in that way. Okay.
Mm. Were you the only person, or there was a team of you?
No, I was the only person on behalf of the Federation organising it. And I used to go to the Federation executive meetings and give reports every 2 or 3 months.
You were on the executive?
No, I wasn't then. But later on, I did become second vice president. And I took a 3-year term as that.
Second vice president.
Yes.
So there's president, first vice president.
And a second vice president.
And that's in case the first two die. And you
yes. So I was the second vice president.
The vice president is the one that doesn't do the work. Underlings do all the work.
Yeah.
Have a title to
but
go by.
Being
as well.
Second vice president.
Yeah.
I was able to make quite a major contribution because I had a huge knowledge in local skating and, of course, running major championships.
So what about the president and first vice president? Had they been involved in all that sort of thing too? Or
they had a good knowledge of it, yes. Hmm. But as far as the nationals are concerned, as event manager, I sort of controlled the event for 6 or 7 days each step run on for.
Wow.
It was huge because you used to start in the morning 7:30 and go through to 11 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
At the end of 6-7 days, I was absolutely worn out. And I was.
How did your daughter feel about it?
She just accepted it.
You grow with it, don't you?
Yeah.
That's what my
dad becomes a. It's a family. Skating is your family.
Yeah.
And the Nationals being held at January every year, it was like your annual holidays. So and all the families used to treat the Nationals as their annual holiday.
So it's almost like being at a campground and you meet up with all your old friends each
year. And I got to know just so many skaters and their parents and their families throughout the country during those 17 years as championship manager. A couple of other things I did as championship manager was I ran the Oceania Championships in Napier in 1996. And in 2008...
Oceania. Where did the people come from?
They came from Australia.
Australia
and New Zealand.
So it's just Australia.
The Oceania actually covered the whole Pacific Rim.
Yeah.
And we used to get one or two people come from Asia countries.
Okay.
But it was mainly Australia and New Zealand, So in 1996, I ran the Oceanias in Napier. And in 2008, it was hosted in Palmerston North. Mm-hmm. And I was event manager for that as well. So that was sort of the end of my era as event manager. In 1991...
Now, wait, did did you get any acknowledgement when you finished that? They gave you a gold watch? Or
yes, they did, actually. You see a photograph up here of the president giving me a presentation. There's a New Zealand president making a presentation to me.
I can't quite see what he's giving you there.
I've got a nice ornament they gave me. Yes, that was... And also, the club made me a life member.
Mm-hmm.
And New Zealand Federation made me a life member as well. Life member of both of them.
Mm.
But back in 1991, Nicola was selected for the New Zealand team to skate in the Asian Championships in Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
And I was accepted the role as being New Zealand team manager.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt I had the skills to do it. I volunteered and the executive appointed me to do that. Now, that team involved 14 skaters in both artistic and speed. I took two coaches who were appointed by the Federation, and five parents came.
Mm-hmm.
So it was 19 in the group. But it involved a huge amount of work for me because I had to organise the airfares, all the travel arrangements, the accommodation, and the New Zealand uniforms.
Yeah.
And there was nothing for
so
me
to... So Audrey had to make all the uniforms?
No. New Zealand uniforms were made... I think the Federation purchased them and the parents would purchase them back off the Federation.
Oh, okay.
Hmm. But that Hong Kong trip was a major thing. When we did get there, the speed skating was held outside in a... outside rink,
mm-hmm.
and the temperatures were 30 plus,
mm-hmm.
and the artistic skating was held in a rink, inside rink in the stadium, which was
air conditioned.
Yeah, but the daytime we used to have all the speed on the outside, and at night time in the late afternoon I'd go to the indoor stadium for the free skating and figures.
So with a speed skating event, how long would it take? Was it, it's all different distances?
Different, yes. They'd have 200 metres and different lengths.
Yeah, and if you're up to a marathon or something.
Different grades,
5K is the maximum?
I didn't have any big events, not 5K over there, no. No marathons or anything like that.
Yeah.
No, it was all... was all
short sprint type.
Yes, it was.
And now these days, there's all these sort of aerodynamic outfits and things. Did they then, or you just wear shorts and t-shirts?
Shorts and t-shirts in those
days. No knee guards or anything in case
the
you
speed start. Skaters had skin suits,
yes. Yeah.
They were starting to come in then.
Yeah.
So they got quite modern. Yes.
Not the lycra like they have nowadays.
Yeah. But this is on concrete, is it? So is there any safety thing on knees and elbows? Did they crash out at
all? Yes, they crashed a lot.
Yeah, injuries?
Yes.
What sort of injuries?
It's mainly skin taken off.
Knees
and elbows.
Yeah.
But these parents are very good at repairing their own kids.
Yeah, patch them up and kick them back
up.
Out again.
Yeah, because to get skin to grow back, it's quite an effort I had to go into it. And the parents
very, very good. Bandaged them up.
And the parents knew what to do to get.
So
are
you
right.
saying the special technique used to get the skin to grow back quickly?
They used to do things here.
You don't know the any tips
not,
here?
No, not really.
secret tip about use beaten eggs.
But anyway, I learned a lot on that trip to Hong Kong. It was probably, if I use the word, dawning again.
But you were left to do all the organisation.
The trouble was, yes. See, that in those days, there was no guidelines.
Yeah.
In fact, when I got back from Hong Kong, the committee, the New Zealand Federation Committee, asked me to write a a booklet.
So not a only do they get you to work your tool out yourself, but then you have to write it up for everyone else.
Yeah, I had to. But
there was no travel agent organising group.
We had a travel agent. I contacted travel agent. Traveller dealt organised.
Yeah.
So that was the easy part. Mm.
Yeah.
But nothing else. I had to liaise with the Hong Kong Federation.
Yeah.
And some was a bit difficult, particularly over there. They used to have meetings. They had to have two languages. They'd be talking in Asian, of course.
Yeah.
And some in English. So very, very difficult.
And it was mainly Asian countries plus Australia and New Zealand.
It was Hong Kong, China, Taiwan, and New Zealand, Australia.
So it was a strong political rivalry.
Well, the Asian countries are very different.
Yeah.
But they're very good hosts. You know, they can't do enough for you. Yeah. Really, really good. But the language is a barrier.
Yeah,
but
the Chinese dominated, or was it too early?
No. Chinese are very new in roller skating, and this is one of the major reasons why they wanted us, Australia and New Zealand, to go there so they could learn. And it's quite funny, the Asians with their cameras, and videos, because videos was
just coming in.
You're just coming in those days, and they were there. And I can remember they took an interest in Nicola, because Nicola got a bronze medal in figure skating.
Yeah.
And to see these Asian people taking all these videos and close-ups of her, watching her doing these figures.
Oh, all the movements. So
all the movements, so they could learn. Yeah.
So, and judging, it is a very precise thing, is it?
Yeah. Okay. And, of course, you have they have world-level judges for competitions like that, and the judges from the world go to these competitions to judge.
So does this mean the Asians now are very competitive in those areas?
No, they haven't progressed as much as I thought they would. Asians are involved in so many sports in and around the world. Anyway, but getting back to the Hong Kong, using the tube and keeping track of all the skaters. I used to do a head count for everywhere we went. I'd be counting up to 21 to make sure I had everybody there. So I just try and get everybody, keep everybody in groups.
Oh, you like that? Those tour guide thing, you walk along with a pole and a flag on top,
just
to see where you're up.
Just about like I felt like that.
Yeah.
But I was all the time counting.
Yeah.
Because just millions of people in Hong Kong. Yeah. It was so easy to get lost, and I thought if I lose somebody, I'll never find them again.
Now, had you had experience of travel to those countries before?
No.
So that would be quite daunting to lead a group like that in a country where you knew very little of the culture.
I tell you what, it blew my mind.
But English was okay for you could get by with that?
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, what I've learned over there, If you wanted to find something out, I just approached somebody young, because the younger Asians all learned English as a second language, a lot of them did.
Yeah.
So if I wanted to know something, I'd just go and find somebody who's young, and I'd ask them. And that was so good, because they're so polite over there, of course. And
Yeah,
it was quite an exercise.
They got more respect for older people, I think.
And did you travel elsewhere overseas?
No. As far as skating, no. Aldrin and I did a lot of travelling after I retired from Steelfort. But that was the only one I did in roller skating.
Right.
Although I was New Zealand team manager for two lots of competitions in New Zealand.
Yeah.
In 1992 and 1993,
I
was team manager for the New Zealand Pacific Championships, and there was another one which I can't recall the name of. But one of those was quite big. I was looked after about 80 or 90 skaters that was quite big, but being in New Zealand was much easier.
Now with the overseas travel like that. I know academic conferences, people think, oh, you go to all these countries, but you go, you're in the hotel, you go to the conference, and you go home, and you've no time to see anything. Did you have any free time to look around?
Well, not during the competition in Hong Kong, but what we did, we decided to stay on for a week afterwards, which was really great, because we remember Hong Kong was one of the greatest experiences for us in travel. It's a fascinating place.
What stands out for you?
Just the Hong Kong itself, and Stanley Street, one of the great tourist spots.
Yeah.
You know, the things you could buy there.
Oh, and so it's a shopping street?
Yeah.
And what did you get? Did you buy things?
Yeah, you can buy things so cheap. Beautiful clothes and things.
Oh, is this where you found a tailor to make up some suits for
no,
you?
No, I didn't need it.
You didn't do it?
But you could buy sneakers and stuff, so cheap. And from there we did day trips into China and not Taiwan,
Macau.
Trip to Macau on the hydrofoil.
Yeah.
And
so what was China like? Was it still...
It was a day trip.
Had it moved forward a lot since
that time? Well, China was just starting to develop itself.
So were they all wearing the blue outfits, or it was after that time? You know, the standardised blue clothes.
I can remember all the big trucks, army trucks.
Oh, okay.
Because we went down to, I can't recall the name of the place, but used to be called Canton.
Yeah.
And it's got another name, Queen Chiao or something it's called now. Yeah. I can't recall. But that was such a fascinating trip.
Yeah.
And we came back on the train to Hong Kong. I think the train was about 2 hours, 2 hours in the train, 2 or 3 hours.
This was before reunification, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
The trip we did was what they called New Territories.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
But being Canton, just there was millions and millions of people.
Mm.
And the push bikes.
Yeah.
I mean, just see millions and millions of push bikes. Yeah. Just incredible.
Okay. So you went there with obviously a large number of young New Zealanders. This would be totally alien for them, was it? How did they take it?
Well, the trip to China we did on our own. Just Audrey and I, and Nicola came with us. Yeah.
But for the young ones, just their experience of Hong Kong, was it quite
just
overawing for them?
No, just a massive learning experience,
Just
to be another culture.
Yeah.
And to see a place with millions of people. Just amazing. Yeah.
And the food?
Well, the food was a bit of a problem because most of the food was Asian. But we found a restaurant about 9 or 10 tube stations away that served English food.
You go all the way to Hong Kong and then look for a restaurant with English food.
Oh, well.
Yeah.
You mean bangers and mash?
Diet was important.
Yeah.
Yeah, the kids usually had to have a diet that they used to. And to compete well, they had to eat food they were used to eating.
Oh,
it wasn't going to upset their tummies.
So otherwise they get sick and that sort of thing, as you know.
Yeah.
It was important for them to have good food.
Yeah.
And one of the coaches was great on his diets. And we found this restaurant. So every night we used to leave the hotel and go on the tube to this restaurant every night. And so we could have English food.
When you say English, what do you mean by English food there?
Well, as English as you could get in Hong Kong.
So you mean roast beef and
mashed potatoes? Recall what it was, but it was something that
something they were familiar with a knife and fork.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Knife and fork. You had to ask for knife and forks because you never got them. You asked for them. But remember, it was a bit of a joke one day. We were looking for something to eat, and one of the speed skaters said to the coach, "I know a good place we can go," and he says, It's called the Golden Arches. So we went to this place called the Golden Arches, and because when we got there, it was McDonald's, and this coach was absolutely horrified. She said, "I don't want my coach, my skaters eating McDonald's." She says, "They can't skate on ice, on hamburgers." Anyway, because
just a minute. This sounds as if your skating was like your athlete's really rigorous diet sort of thing. Diet,
well,
and exercise.
Well, they have a diet they were used to, of course.
Yeah,
And okay. One of the coaches, Vilma was her name. She's still alive. And she's 90, 91.
Mm.
And she's adamant about good food.
Mm.
And she wanted her skaters to have good food. Yeah.
Mm.
So I've never forgotten this Golden Arches. In fact, quite often when I see her now, I remind her about us going to the Golden Arches.
You went there and you ate there?
We went to the Golden Arches to get what we thought was English food.
Yeah, I was going to say, did it taste like normal McDonald's?
No. McDonald's in Hong Kong doesn't taste the same as it does in New Zealand.
Yeah?
Well, I never thought so anyway.
Yeah. Now, over this period of time, what sort of stands out as a highlight or highlights in the different areas that you, over your span of, 20-odd years or whatever it was? What was the big highlight for you?
Oh, I guess being team manager in Hong Kong was a highlight.
Right.
But I felt being event manager for the Nationals every year was a highlight in my life.
Hmm.
Yeah, I put so much effort into it. And I took great pride because I used to have a goal. Every year I had a goal that I'd try and enhance the Nationals in some way.
Yeah.
I was always a great one for improvement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit like quality insurance in a way. If you can make it an improvement every year.
Yeah.
And I tried to run the championships as a professional manager.
Is it the Japanese management? Small improvements, you keep going.
Well, it's a bit like quality insurance, isn't it?
Yeah.
That was my goal every year to add something to the championships to enhance it a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess those 17 years as event manager was great. Though, while I was doing that, of course, I took on another job, being funding manager for the New Zealand Federation.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that for 16 years, and I retired from that about 2 years ago.
Okay.
But that was another experience because the club relied on trying to get outside funds and taking on a role of funding manager was involved getting applications made through the Gaming Machine Trusts. So I used to every year try and get enough money.
You're saying gambling and machine?
Gaming machine trusts.
Is that one on bandit revenue?
Yes. So every year I used to make applications with three or four of those gaming machine trusts.
And it's sort of formulaic, is it? Once you've got one that works, you can just tweak it a bit?
Yes, and I had a lot of templates of information on the computer.
Mm.
And I used to put these applications in and formulate a policy document for each year's chairmanships. And the hosting clubs used to get quotes for me because I had to put quotes in with the application forms. So I used to get sometimes 2,000 or 3,000 up to 7,000 or 8,000 every year from those trusts. Put towards running the national championships. So that was quite different involved in that. But after the events and we spent the money, I had to do
You got to report back and
I had
say
to do reports it, yeah. For the auditors. So that was quite a task too, doing that. So in the end, I gave it all away.
I was going to say, it takes a lot of dedication. You do it for your daughter and for the roller skating, and you end up doing loads of administration.
Yeah, well, most parents, of course, when their children give up skating, their parents bow out.
Yes.
But I sort of became sort of a like skating family, and you get built up bonds with people.
Yeah, yeah.
And you get involved in the sport, and you feel you can do something for the sport.
Yeah.
And that's what keeps you there.
Yeah.
And it had become part of your way of life.
It did,
something that you enjoyed doing as well. It wasn't just, you know, you weren't doing it just for Nicola. You were
I did it initially because Nicola was involved with skating.
Yeah, that's how you got involved.
So how well did she do in the end?
Oh, she won quite a few championships throughout New Zealand,
yeah.
But her highlight was, of course, getting bronze medal in Hong Kong.
Now, the other thing, because we're just about at time again, but overall, how did the New Zealand team do in Hong Kong?
The artistic teams didn't do all that well. They used to get in the top 10.
Yeah.
But speed skating.
So there were lots of different countries then?
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, okay. Yes. I'm not sure how many countries, but there was probably 20 or 30, countries.
Yeah.
I went to World Championships in Australia twice.
Yeah.
They held them at the Surfers Paradise. So I went over twice.
Okay.
And Audrey and I would go and take Nicola with us.
Yeah. So, but in speed skating then they did better?
Speed skating, yes. Our club, or many of the showgrounds, had a very good coach called Roy Dobbin.
Yeah.
In fact, his two sons were very good skaters, the Dobbin boys. Marvellous. But Roy, the father, became an international coach.
Oh, yeah.
And he was a very, very good coach. In fact, he pioneered a lot of this coaching for speed skaters in New Zealand. And skaters under his
Under his wing
did very, very well. Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you're a fan of NPR, listening to our podcasts and live stream has never been easier. Just search for accessmedia.nz on the App Store or Google Play and download the app with the kiwifruit logo. Once you've got it, pick Manawatu People's Radio from the list of stations and go find your new favourite show.